How will President Trump's decision to end DACA affect Florida? A closer look just ahead. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. And thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Download the podcast through iTunes or our WJCT app. Just ahead, we'll hear from local immigration experts on the fate of Florida's so-called dreamers. You can get on the line now with your thoughts at 549-2937. Then later, a big push from the VA to reduce the number of suicides by combat veterans. So many veterans affected here in our area. We'll have a closer look. Plus, lots of events are getting canceled this weekend, of course, due to Hurricane Irma. But there are a few things coming up on the calendar to tell you about. The Spectator has a look ahead at that. Speaking of the storm, here is the latest on Irma. The death toll now stands at 11 from the massive hurricane, one of the strongest ever recorded in the Atlantic. The Category 5 storm is expected to maintain powerful winds as it makes landfall in Florida early on Saturday and makes its way up the East Coast. Now, the latest models show Irma coming near South Florida on Sunday morning and closer to our area Sunday night into Monday. At that point, we will expect winds of 60 miles an hour or greater for a period that could last up to a day and a half. There is also the possibility of 6 to 12 inches of rain from Irma and a storm surge of 2 to 5 feet. But we expect Category 3 conditions from Hurricane Irma just offshore, just to the east of us, Sunday night into Monday. Of course, the storm could move, but that is the latest model we're getting. Be sure to stick with WJCT. We'll bring you updates all through this week and weekend until the danger passes from Hurricane Irma. Now we've got an update for you on the fate of the Dreamers, as they're called. Two senators Tuesday urged Congress to move quickly on bipartisan legislation that would provide legal status to the hundreds of thousands of young undocumented immigrants who have lived in the U.S. since they were kids. About 800,000 people now face losing protection from the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, program. The latest call for action on the DREAM Act has been issued by Senators Dick Durbin and Lindsey Graham, a bipartisan push, and it comes just hours after the Trump administration said it would phase DACA out over the next 6 months. Now, this most recent version of the DREAM Act, introduced in July, would offer legal permanent residence and a path to citizenship for young immigrants if they came here as children, obtained a high school degree or GED, and they're enrolled in higher education, employed, or serve in the military. Immigrants would also have to undergo background checks, demonstrate English language proficiency, and have a clear record, no felonies. How does all of this affect Florida? That's the question on our minds this morning, because the phasing out of DACA impacts more than 70,000 Floridians. We're going to begin the hour with a closer look as we welcome Karen Winston. She's a Jacksonville immigration attorney. Good to see you.
Thank you. Good morning, Melissa.
Also with us, Mario DiCunto, mental health counselor at UNF and head of the Democratic Hispanic Caucus of Florida of Duval County. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And here's our question to callers. What are your thoughts and reactions to the latest move around DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals? 70,000 or so dreamers, as they're called, live here in the Sunshine State, including several thousand in North Florida. Give us a call with your thoughts and questions, 549-2937, that's 549-2937, or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax. Let's begin with you, Karen Winston. What about this move in the Congress to provide legal status for the 800,000 or so dreamers? It's something President Trump said he was hoping would happen when he announced through his Attorney General Jeff Sessions that he planned to phase DACA out. Do you think the Congress can provide a legislative fix here?
Well, Congress has tried several times in the past to do this, unfortunately, unsuccessfully. In 2001, the DREAM Act was first introduced, and that lost by a very narrow vote. There's been other attempts by Congress to pass some kind of comprehensive immigration plan, particularly for DREAMers, that hasn't been successful. But I think that there's enough I'm hopeful that there's enough public outrage over the termination of the current DACA program that citizens will motivate their Congress or their representatives to enact this legislation immediately.
Mario DiCunto, strong bipartisan majorities are in favor of protecting this population in some way or another.
That's correct. We've actually seen that through the history, our Republican leaders have supported a route to allow Mexican immigrants to gain a safe and, you know, a normal status in our country to be able to survive and have normal lives, even dating back to President Reagan and Bush. So right now, what this issue is, it's surprising to see that our country has taken this turn. Another attack, it seems to be, on the Hispanic community, and it's definitely tearing at the community, tearing at the fabric of what holds us together.
Do you have any local clients, any Dreamers, who are waiting to see their status?
Oh, definitely. I have some as young as 16 years old that are attending high schools locally, and they're very afraid and very concerned about how this impacts their lives and their families' lives.
And so, as an attorney, it sounds as though you're in limbo too, waiting to see what, if anything, can be done.
Yeah, absolutely. Congress, now that the president has made clear that he does not support Dreamers, he wavered back and forth. It is time for Congress to act, and we have to pressure them to do that.
Okay, and if you're just tuning in, we're talking about how the phasing out of DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program that the president says he now wants to end, how that will affect some 800,000 people around the country, immigrants who were brought here illegally as children but have known no other country than the United States. We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Give us a call and let us know what you think about this and if you think Congress should provide some sort of solution to the Dreamers. Now, you mentioned both former presidents George H.W. Bush and President Reagan having very different positions as Republicans on this issue than President Trump. And there is a piece of video that's floating around getting a lot of attention this week. This is from a Republican primary debate in Texas in April of 1980, when both George H.W. Bush and Ronald Reagan were asked about this issue. Let's listen.
Do you think the children of illegal aliens should be allowed to attend Texas public schools free, or do you think that their parents should pay for their education?
I'd like to see something done about the illegal alien problem that would be so sensitive and so understanding about labor needs and human needs that that problem wouldn't come up. But today, if those people are here, I would reluctantly say I think they would get whatever it is that they're, you know, what the society is giving to their neighbors. But the problem has to be solved. The problem has to be solved because as we have kind of made illegal some kinds of labor that I'd like to see legal, we're doing two things. We're creating a whole society of really honorable, decent, family-loving people that are in violation of the law. And secondly, we're exacerbating relations with Mexico. The answer to your question is much more fundamental than whether they attend Houston schools, it seems to me. I don't want to see a whole, if they're living here, I don't want to see a whole thing of 6- and 8-year-old kids being made, you know, one totally uneducated and made to feel that they're living with outside the law. Let's address ourselves to the fundamentals. These are good people, strong people. Part of my family is a Mexican.
Can I add to that? I think the time has come that the United States and our neighbors, particularly our neighbor to the south, should have a better understanding and a better relationship than we've ever had. And I think that we haven't been sensitive enough to our size and our power. They have a problem of 40 to 50% unemployment. Now, this cannot continue without the possibility arising with regard to that other country that we talked about, of Cuba and what it is stirring up, of the possibility of trouble below the border, and we could have a very hostile and strange neighbor on our border. Rather than making them or talking about putting up a fence, why don't we work out some recognition of our mutual problems, make it possible for them to come here legally with a work permit, and then while they're working and earning here, they pay taxes here. And when they want to go back, they can go back, and they can cross and open the border both ways by understanding their problems. This is the only safety valve right now they have with that unemployment that probably keeps the lid from blowing off down there. And I think we could have a fine relationship, and it would solve the problem you mentioned also.
All right, that's Bush and Reagan 37 years ago, mind you. We have a very different Republican Party today on these issues. What were your thoughts as you listened to that exchange?
I think that they were getting it right in a lot of ways, that they described our immigrant neighbors and people who want to be in this country, that they're contributing to the country, that they're the majority are good people who are working hard. That's a much different narrative than is being told today.
Mario.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, we're targeting folks who are, you know, they're tax-paying students. There are people who are working. They have to maintain a status that's a spotless status in order to be able to even be in DACA. They have a temporary protection. It's not even long-term. It's no path to citizenship, despite what people believe. That's one of the myths. They can't bring their parents in. They're not getting citizenship out of it. It's not an amnesty. It's not like a full pardon or forgiveness like what Reagan did when he came in office, where he actually provided green cards to several illegal aliens in the country and allowed a lot of people to regain their lives. That is not this. This is just a very watered down version of the Dreamer Act that failed in Congress. And DACA is just President Obama's version of what it could have been. It's the simplest watered down version, and it barely gives students anything. It just gives them the ability to study and work and contribute to the community, nothing else. And even that is being removed, which is it's a great shame.
Okay. Congress under a lot of pressure now to do something. As we look at the track record of Congress in recent years, they've had limited success on coming together on these controversial issues. Let's say Congress doesn't get something done. Then what we will be looking at are stories of young people being deported, often to countries they've never even visited. I think the emotional impact of that is going to be quite striking for many Americans to watch.
Yeah, I think it would be absolutely devastating to the people affected, to the country. And actually, we're all going to be, if we would all be affected by that, because these are our neighbors. These are kids that are going to school with our kids. These are our teachers. These are our first responders. These DACA recipients are integrated into every fabric of our society, and it would literally rip the country apart.
All right. What do you think about DACA, everybody? Congress says it will try to provide a legislative fix to President Trump's announcement he's going to phase the program out. This affects 800,000 or so young adults, some still children. They were brought here illegally as children, but have been up until now shielded from deportation. What should be done about the Dreamers, as they're called? 70,000 or so here in Florida. 549-2937. John is on the south side. Hi, John. Good morning.
Good morning. How's everyone doing today?
Good, thanks. We're going to ride this storm out and get right through to the other side. go ahead, John.
So, listen, I've been listening to the debate going back and forth, and I hear a lot of rhetoric, which I can appreciate. Emotions are high, and people, we're human beings. We love each other. We don't want to see people suffer. But at the end of the day, I got to sort of agree with what Trump did, because we are a nation of laws, and we can't continue to allow the executive branch of government to make rules. Congress has got to do their job. And it's not about, I don't really believe it's about demonizing or excluding or kicking people out of the country. It's about having a real place for them here, where it's not just an executive order giving them temporary status. We need to get very serious about it. And the only place that can happen is in the Congress. So if people want to vent their anger or feel upset or whatnot, they need to focus that and talk to the congressmen, to their senators, and get stuff done the way it's supposed to be done.
All right. Thanks, John. Right. And DACA was put through under the Obama administration by executive order. What about John's point that Congress needs to step up here?
I think John makes an excellent point. The reason why Obama acted in 2012 to create the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program was because of Congress's inaction and in an effort to just protect these kids. But the real fix does lie in the hands of Congress. It lies in a change in the law. And it shouldn't just be a temporary protected status. They should have a way to eventually get a lawful or more permanent status through paying taxes, contributing to the country, passing background checks, which they have to do for DACA anyway. A longer-term solution is most definitely needed.
Mario, can Congress pass this latest version of the DREAM Act? It's now being introduced again by Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, Dick Durbin, Democrat of Illinois.
I believe it is. I think this is the time. I believe that now that everyone's hands been held to the fire and they're beginning to see what could possibly come of the economic impact, supposedly in the billions, and the impacts on people's lives. Let's not forget that. Sometimes people only hear numbers, but this is actually affecting real people, real families. That's one of the things that we're trying to do. We're trying to get a bipartisan response. We're trying to get Republicans and Democrats together to either create a writing letter party or a calling party in your homes or wherever, obviously after the hurricane.
And speaking of which, we just got an update here into the newsroom, letting everybody out there on the roads know that the Hart Bridge has just been closed to traffic. This while crews remove barricades and other construction materials on that bridge ahead of Hurricane Irma. You can expect the Hart Bridge to remain closed until this afternoon. That, according to FDOT, follow the detour signs if you're out there and you need to take the Hart Bridge.
Thank you for that. I was planning on it. just to wrap up my point, which I think there are a lot of Republicans who support their senators, who are supporting our South Carolina Senator Graham. I think this is a good time to do that. We have an email if you'd like to reach out to us, if you want to join us, DuvalDHCF@gmail.com. It's Duval, D as in David, H, C as in Charles, F as in Frank, @gmail. And we would be happy to have a bipartisan party where we sit down and write letters so that we can get a real solution for this.
549-2937. Reed is on the road. Hey, Reed, good morning. Are you heading out of the
good
path
morning.
Of the storm?
How are
you? You heading out of the path of the storm?
Heading back up to Jacksonville.
Okay.
Hopefully things will turn out for the best, but have a backup plan if things go bad. So
good.
All prepared.
Yeah, go ahead. What are your thoughts?
Well, I wanted to know what your thoughts on the emotions of recent legal immigrants were who have spent years and many resources on obtaining permanent status as a citizen here legally, and how they might respond to permanent status based on being here illegally, whether it be children or now adults. And I think one of the interesting things is how we had such a high, or at least much higher turnout for Trump in the Latino vote here in Florida, which was surprising. So is there any thoughts on how they respond to this?
Yeah, thanks, Reed. Karen?
Yeah, I have heard from some people that they, the argument that they have waited in line to get lawful status. And so they maybe don't think that it's right for somebody who didn't wait in line to get lawful status. But there's a big distinction here when we're talking about dreamers, and that is that these young people were brought here as children. They did not jump in front of the line on their own. They did not have the choice to cross the border. They were brought here as children and are integrated into the society and should be protected for many reasons. And I think that while some people who have lawfully immigrated, maybe through a very long process, feel the way that the caller is stating, I think that the majority do not, at least in my practice in representing many people who have waited in line, there's a sense that something should be done for these kids. That's the overwhelming sense.
Travis on the South Side. Hey, Travis. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Yes. Hey, great show today, and hope everyone stays safe from the hurricane.
Yeah, you too. You too.
My comment was, you know, we this is Travis from World Relief, and we've been working years on seeing immigration reform. And my comment is, you know, it's sad what's happening with DACA. Obviously, we're really upset about it, and it's concerning. But if you want to look at the silver lining, what this does is it really does kind of put the fire under Congress to pass legislation. And I would say, you know, we're talking about Dreamers, about 800,000. But the truth is we need a solution for the 12-plus million people here undocumented. You know, it's just been kicked down the road for so many years. And I'll remember, I think it was in 2013, the Senate passed, I think it was SR 741, and it was great legislation. It was actually, it was bipartisan. It was the Gang of Eight, if you remember. Our very own Marco Rubio was part of that. And I remember being in those talks. We took multiple trips to Washington with faith, law enforcement, and business leaders from all sides of the political spectrum who are for comprehensive immigration reform. And that term, I think, has kind of gotten it's gotten politicized, unfortunately. But, you know, I just really hope that we can have people on both sides understand how badly our country needs this, that we can't afford to keep things going the way they are for multiple reasons. One, we do want to respect the rule of law, and we need to have laws that are reasonable and that are enforceable. You know, we do need to shore up border security, but it can't just end there.
Yeah.
There's got to be a solution for people here, a lasting solution.
A comprehensive solution. And, yeah. Thank you, Travis.
Absolutely.
That's Travis with World Relief calling in a local resettlement agency. Mario.
Yeah. You know, he hit on a lot of good points, Travis. One of them is that we have our primaries coming up in about 6 months, and this is a great time to inform you know, Congress and our senators, hey, we are not happy about this. We need our country to start working together, and this is a good time to let them know your job is going to be on the line in a few months. And if you're not talking what we want to say, we'll get the next guy.
Do you think this issue will affect the midterms, the 2018 elections, the congressional midterms? A lot of people in the Congress up for reelection.
Most definitely. This is going to be a key issue, I think, in the midterms.
David is along I-295. Hello, David.
I was talking to that other gentleman, and what my feelings are this. We need to establish a set of rules for everyone. If for example, if we have children that are in school, then they qualify to stay in this country. If we have people that are working and contributing to our tax base, then they qualify to stay here. But the people that are just not doing anything but having a half a dozen children and collecting money from the government, I am not in favor of that. So I was telling him, I said, I remember when we had the draft, I was part of that. And if you were in college, you had a diploma. But as soon as you got out of college, that diploma was gone. So if people are working and can continue working and providing up to a certain age, I mean, I don't expect them to have to work for, you know, until they're 70. But
yeah, I hear you, David. I got your point completely.
Point.
Sure. What about David's point?
Sure. First of all, that is sort of what the deferred DACA did, right? It that's sort of the group that's sort of similar to what the rules were. If you were in school or had graduated from a U.S. high school, you would be eligible for DACA, including you know, passing background checks and having been brought to the U.S. before your 16th birthday. But one very, very important point, it's a sort of a terrible myth that's out there, is that undocumented immigrants can receive public benefits. That is not true. TAMF, Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, Medicaid, Medicare, all of the public benefits that exist, referred to as welfare, those are not available to undocumented immigrants. Those were also not available to DACA recipients.
Go ahead, Mario.
No, another point is that a lot of people believe that DACA students are, you know, getting free education or something like that. These people are paying out of pocket to go to college, out of pocket. You know, I don't know anybody that pays out of pocket to go to school. That's how much these folks want it. They don't qualify for financial aid. They don't get any kind of grants. They don't have any of that. They have to pay out of pocket. So we're talking about sometimes out-of-state tuition, which many of us, we know it's twice the amount. So it's probably benefiting our universities that we have DACA students, because these people are giving cash immediately just to be able to survive and to be able to have an educational career.
Let's go to Aaron on the west side. Aaron, good morning to you.
Hi.
Hey.
Good morning. How are you?
All right, thanks. Go ahead.
So the point I want to bring up is that it's completely valid to want to go through the government and to make sure Congress is doing their job, and also to worry about if people are being a drain on resources and that sort of thing. But you have to be reminded that these are people. These are people who are boosting our economy, that are working jobs that normal Americans tend not to want to look for. And they're important to our economy. And you can't just go through all this rhetoric of government and laws and all this other kind of stuff. You have to know that these are people that are living their lives.
Yeah. Thanks, Aaron. So as we wait to see what happens with this, what's your position that you're taking with your clients that you're representing, Karen?
Well, I'm, of course, speaking with all of them, advising them about the specific legal requirements in the rescission of DACA announcement that was made on Tuesday. And I'm letting them know that we, you know, stand by them in their fight to change this in the future. It was in large part the political pressure that DACA recipients put on Obama for action that will be channeled into this next fight. This is an energized, talented group of young people, and if anybody can get this done, I know that they can, and many Americans like myself have their back.
We'll continue to follow it. In the meantime, she's immigration attorney Karen Watson, also with us Mario DiCunto from the local Hispanic Leadership Council. Thank you both for being with us. We'll
Thank
be
you.
Right Thank back. More, lots of weekend events getting canceled due to Hurricane Irma. Some things aren't going forward, though. The Spectator will have a look. But up next, how the First Coast is reaching out to help veterans with their number one issue, suicide. We'll be right back.
We barely started to catch our breath from Hurricane Harvey. Now Irma is headed our way. Satellites have never observed a more powerful Atlantic hurricane, big enough to cover Ohio. Parts of Puerto Rico could be without power for months, and Florida is bracing for a direct hit. Anticipating Irma, next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Don't be put off by how edgy Naples can seem when you visit Italy.
Even the grime and the dirt on the buildings look like it's been there for 300 years. And yet it's so lively.
We get expert advice for visiting Naples and Oslo. And an international economic advisor figures out how terrorist groups get their money.
They do not kidnap the hostages. They buy them.
Join us for the next Travel with Rick Steves.
Saturday mornings at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Jazz Night in America, we're going instrument shopping at Home Depot.
Like renovated the bathrooms and the kitchens.
And that's where I come, renovate my music.
The world is an instrument, according to Brazilian percussionist Ciro Baptista. That's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Hi, this is Chris Thiele inviting you to join us this weekend for a Prairie Home Companion from the Fitzgerald Theater. Our guests include the Avett brothers, Jessica Hoop, and the comedy of Jen Kirkman. Also on hand, the Royal Academy of Radio Actors, Tim Russell, Serena Brooke, and sound effects man Fred Newman, plus my Song of the Week, our salute to musicians' birthdays, and more, all right here.
Saturday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, coming up soon, you're going to want to catch the latest Ken Burns documentary premiering Sunday, September 17th at 8 here on WJCT Television, The Vietnam War, a look at that incredibly consequential conflict that affected so many thousands of veterans in this country, including my own dad. The effects of war and combat are deep and lasting. And the Secretary of Veterans Affairs' number one clinical priority for their population is suicide prevention. Now, 20 veterans each day commit suicide across the country, and only 6 of that group ever have utilized VA services. So getting help to those in need is paramount to saving more lives. We want to get the word out on that right now as we welcome two guests, Thomas Wisniewski. He's director with the North Florida, South Georgia Veterans Health System through the Department of Veterans Affairs. Good morning.
Good morning.
Also with us, Catherine Eicher. She's suicide prevention coordinator for the VA here on the First Coast. Good to see you.
Thank you.
It's 549-2937 if you want to connect with these two folks. And let's begin with you, Thomas. Lots of anticipation about the Ken Burns documentary premiering this month on PBS stations, just to look at the war, but after the war, the reverberations for those veterans and then for waves of veterans that came after, particularly in recent years in conflicts in the Middle East, you deal with so much of the fallout from that. Suicide prevention, it's my understanding, is your top priority, correct?
Correct. Suicide prevention is the VA's top clinical priority, and as you mentioned, the after effects of war continue for many, many years after. Mm-hmm. Many of our recently enrolled veterans are Vietnam veterans who are coming to us for care, both primary care and mental health care. And VA has done many studies about suicide and identifying risks, and we've determined, as you mentioned, that 20 veterans are committing suicide each day, 14 of which VA has not had the opportunity to interact with. So we're doing a variety of different initiatives to outreach and get the word out about our programming. We're partnering with communities, with businesses, with educational institutions about suicide risks and what to look for. And just the simple act of being there with a veteran is very important. And that's the theme for this coming year, is be there for veterans for their need.
Sure. Catherine Eicher, you are the suicide prevention coordinator for the VA all across the First Coast here. What a big job you have. And as we're learning, lots of veterans that committed suicide never got any help. You want people to know where the help is available, right?
Absolutely.
How can they access what you're doing?
We always have the Veterans Crisis Line available for veterans to call. They can use text messaging as well at 838-255 or veteranscrisisline.net, where they can live chat with a VA responder from the Veterans Crisis Line, as well as they can check their eligibility. They can check if they're eligible for VA services by bringing their DD-214 to a local VA and meeting with one of our eligibility consultants.
And if someone is in crisis and they're suicidal, what can you tell us about, obviously over the years there have been documented problems with accessing care through the VA, bureaucratic red tape and things like that, which, you know, there are certainly explanations for a lot of that, but if someone needs help immediately, mm-hmm. and they can't get it just due to trying to access care and going through the hoops of that, Are there ways to cut through that so that people can get instant help?
Well, if a veteran is in crisis immediately, their safety is paramount. So they can present at any hospital, any VA facility to access care immediately. Again, we have the Veterans Crisis Line that is manned 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, that will initiate help for someone who is in crisis immediately.
And again, you text to 838-255. Just send that text to 838-255 or go to veteranscrisisline.net. And lots of calls coming in for the VA officials here. It's 549-2937 to join us. Lori is in Riverside. Hi, Lori. Good morning.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I'm a mental health counselor, and it's great that we have the crisis line and the texting capabilities. My concern is I used to work with about 20 veterans through the VA system, and that has reduced by half simply because I can't get the authorizations. And when we talk about suicide prevention, weekly therapy for these guys is crucial so that they have someone, so they feel a connection, so they're being monitored. And that's my comment. I want to see how we're going to address that.
Okay, thanks for that. Thomas.
So my assumption from your call is that you're a CHOICE provider, and CHOICE was a program that was initiated to improve access for veterans requiring either mental health care or primary health care or specialty care. And so there's some things that we're doing on to improve our access. There's contact numbers that hopefully you have that we can get that information to you. We monitor how quickly we're turning around these authorizations and getting veterans into care into the community. So we're working to speed that process up. But if you have particular issues, there's phone numbers for the HealthNet company that are available, and we'll certainly work to make access imperative and as quickly as possible. And as Catherine mentioned, we have a number of initiatives. We have access to care, immediate access to care at our facilities through a number of different providers. There's also a web program, maketheconnection.net, where someone can log on and talk and with individuals who have been through a variety of various different mental health issues and just to be support for a veteran that's in crisis.
549-2937, John on the South Side. Hi, John.
Hey, good morning, everyone. How's everyone doing?
All right, thanks. You ready for the storm?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Always prepared.
Yeah, good to hear that. Go ahead.
Yeah, as a Marine, you know, I always have a lot of sympathy for this. And I got a couple questions. You made, and I'd like to take them in two parts if you can. So you made a statement that you have a lot of research and studies on suicide. I was wondering, amongst veterans, I was wondering if you saw some very prominent patterns. For example, those combat veterans with kills under their belt, are they more likely to commit suicide than those that don't, as one example? So what patterns are you observing within, or trends within those who are committing suicide? And secondarily, if you're seeing patterns, what preemptive works are you doing within the military to identify high-risk individuals and preemptively begin to provide them with mental health support?
Yeah, two great questions, John. Thank you. What about that, Catherine?
Well, our recently released data report indicated that there was a pattern amongst veterans that died by suicide between 2001 and 2013, that there were length of deployments were a big common denominator. Frequent deployments, length of deployments, service-related injuries, sexual or physical assault while in the military. And those are some of the common denominators that we found. However, what is ironic is that there was no real connection between a veteran who was in combat and suicide.
No connection.
There was not a clear connection, not as much as the length of deployment, service-related injuries.
And what about the second point he made about identifying people in trouble while they're still serving and getting them services? You know, what about that?
Well, the DOD does have their own suicide prevention program. And they're working. We recently had the DOD VA Suicide Prevention Conference, and we spoke a lot about what we're doing together as to partner in identifying and making resources more available and making the transition between being in the military and transitioning to civilian life easier.
Sure. So, Thomas, what else do you want people to know as you really work to get more veterans access to care?
Well, there's a number of initiatives that we've implemented in terms of providing access to care. We have phone applications that individuals can access to talk and listen about suicide prevention. They're both for the veteran and for their family. We've increased female veteran services, mental health services across our catchment area. We're also expanding access to care by providing mental health screening and treatment. We're also using telephone coaching for veterans that access care. Secretary Shulkin has just authorized the addition of, I believe it's 1,500 clinical mental health workers across our entire VA system. And so our North Florida, South Georgia system will be getting additional mental health staff to help as well.
Lots happening. Again, you need to go to this website if you or someone you love needs help. It's veteranscrisisline.net. Or just text to 838-255 and get immediate help. Thanks so much, Thomas Wisniewski, Catherine Eicher, both with Veterans Affairs here on the First Coast. Thanks for sharing this.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
And we'll be right back.
Whether it's the barcode or IKEA's Billy bookcase, new ideas have shaped our modern economy for better and worse. An ordinary idea can have extraordinary consequences.
It's not really a list of who invented them. It's also a list of who they had an effect on.
Economist Tim Harford on his list of 50 inventions that shaped the modern economy. Next time on 1A. Weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Dig, research, question, repeat. That's what we do every week on Reveal.
I have here thousands of pages of documentation of murder.
I'm Al Edson, host of Reveal, the weekly radio show from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. Reveal, because there's always more to the story.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Welcome back. Well, as Hurricane Irma bears down on Florida, lots of events this weekend and next are being canceled or postponed. We're going to have a quick update on that in a moment, but some things are still going forward. One of them is WIT, the winner of the 1999 Pulitzer Prize for Drama. It's on stage beginning tomorrow night at Amelia Community Theater in Fernandina Beach. Here with a preview, Director Ron Kurtz and Associate Director Tenor Wade. Hey, guys, good morning. And you're going to really ride out that storm. My hat's off to you. I feel like a lot of people are canceling that might not even really need to yet. So I'm glad to see you're going forward. Good morning.
Good morning. And good you morning. Know that old adage in theater, the show must
That's
go on.
That's right.
And it does.
It has to go on. I live that in my bones too, believe me. So tell me about WIT. What's this about?
Essentially, it is about a woman who has metastatic ovarian cancer. And to some people, that, of course, is a very sad topic, but this play takes a different spin on it. Everything from children's literature, Beatrix Potter, to The Runaway Bunny, to the poetry of John Donne, it's mm-hmm. all there. And they are survival aids, really, to
sure.
get beyond.
And this continues the tradition tenor of 36 years of community theater in Amelia. And you've picked amazing, really provocative productions like this one.
Oh, yes. This is going into our 37th year season. And we have a full lineup of 12 shows, 6 in the studio theater like WIT and 12 on the main stage this year.
Okay, so the big debut is tomorrow night.
That's correct.
You're going to maybe cancel on Sunday, but other than that, you're going to do the full run.
Exactly.
Okay, how can people get their tickets to see WIT?
Well, by calling the box office. I'll let Tenor field that question.
Indeed. You can call the box office, or you can also go online to ameliacommunitytheater.org, and you can purchase your tickets there. If you have any questions and you call the box office, they will be able to answer them, but most of our ticket sales come from online.
Okay, get your tickets now to see WIT. Maybe you can serve hurricanes to the audience, you know, New Orleans style.
Along with Pirate Punch.
Oh, there you go. The show will go on this weekend in Fernandina Beach. Tickets at ameliacommunitytheater.com. Can you stick around while we talk about a few other events?
Sure enough.
All right. Thanks so much, Ron Kurtz, Tenor Wade, both with WIT and Amelia Community Theater. Now, as I mentioned, lots of cancellations happening all over the place right now due to Hurricane Irma. We are expecting the storm to make its way up the Florida coast, and we're going to start feeling really high winds Sunday night and then all day Monday. So much is not happening, but there are some things you can look forward to. Carrie Speckman, the Spectator, is here with a special hurricane edition of events. Good morning,
I
my
like
lady.
So many things not happening.
I know.
I'll tell you just a quick rundown of
okay.
what's not happening. Bryan Adams postponed, Adam Ant postponed, Modest Mouse canceled, Armada postponed, Shrimp are moving to whatever venue of the people they were playing, Riverside Arts Market not happening.
Sing Out Loud Festival this yep. weekend
and
in St. Augustine canceled.
Chris Robinson, pretty much everything at St. Augustine Amphitheater
okay.
canceled.
But we heard about the show in Fernandina Beach. That's going forward.
Yes.
Congrats to those guys. Good
yes.
job, guys. What else is happening this weekend?
This weekend?
Or next weekend, I should
or
say.
Month
or
month of September?
Or the month of September. Excuse me, that's right. You're going to show us the whole
the
month.
The whole month.
The
Give
whole
you something
month.
To look forward to.
We're going to look ahead past the storm to some exciting
yes,
things
we are.
Coming up.
All right, so next week, Friday and Saturday, is the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the Jax Doc Fest, which is all
documentary films.
My favorite genre. And they're at Rain Dogs and Sunray right across the street. Very convenient. You can see they have 20 films. You can see 20 films. It's only $30 or $10 per film.
It's a cool venue.
It is. And it's a great festival.
It's a great festival.
Big fun.
JaxDocFest.org. That's next weekend in Five Points.
Yes.
Also next weekend, Tim McGraw and Faith Hill coming to town.
Yes, they sure are. And they're married, you know.
I am aware of that fact.
They've sold a lot of records.
Oh, God, millions. We're off our game here today, Spectator. What's going on here? We need to get back in the groove. Okay, so, and then Fanfare, an opening night celebration.
Of the Symphony returns, and I believe this is the first time they're doing this big return. They're having a red carpet, a champagne toast, and most important, Courtney Lewis will be conducting
Of course. We're doing a radio show with Courtney Lewis and the Symphony that you can hear evenings on 89.9.
What?
So that's always exciting. It's, you know, people get all excited when Courtney Lewis kind of comes
they
in.
They should.
So it's, you know, he's quite the celeb.
Yes, he hottest celeb as I voted for him in Folio Reader's Poll.
Yes. Yes. So go on out Saturday night, September 16th for the opening night of the Symphony. And then on the 17th, it's the Jaguars home opener.
That is correct, against the Titans. And oddly enough, I think they're playing this weekend in Houston.
Yeah,
which
preseason.
Just had the hurricane.
Right.
And now, very, very strange. The 23rd, Lauryn Hill and Nas at Daly's Place.
Oh, that should be a good show.
September 23rd, Intuition's annual Oktoberfest celebration. Also, side note, they are getting a truckload of sand today.
Intuition Ale Works?
Yes. And you can bring, if you bring your own containers and fill it yourself,
you can
free.
Get some sandbags.
Correct.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yes.
Many people might need those. Let's hope, knock on for Micah, that we don't. But okay, Florida Theater has comedian Brian Reagan. And then coming to the arena, Hall & Oates.
Hall & Oates.
Later this
My
month.
My beloved Hall & Oates. Yeah, they will be at the arena.
They can still fill arenas. What about, how, that's pretty wild. Like, that's cool that they're still touring at that level.
Oh, yeah. Remember that? I saw them in Orlando two months ago. Just as fabulous as they ever were.
Yeah. I mean, my hat's off to those guys.
They're
so
awesome.
Yeah. That's September 28th at the arena. Also that weekend, the last weekend in September, is the Home and Patio Show at the Prime Osborne Convention Center.
Yes.
And just a couple of other things. Oh, the Purple Experience.
Oh, my gosh. I watched. It's
a Prince tribute band.
And they're from Minneapolis, so bonus credibility.
How about that?
I watched the video. Oh, my gosh.
They're really good?
Oh, my gosh. He looks like him. Same clothes, same guitar. Amazing.
At Thrasher Horn. That's Saturday, September 30th.
I mean, of course,
30th.
He's not, you know.
Who could ever be the
nobody,
purple one?
But he's pretty darn close.
Okay, so there are a few other ideas and notes and news on Carrie's website. Go to thespectator.com as you plan your September. Where are you going to ride the storm out, my friend?
Right in my beautiful home in Riverside.
In beautiful downtown Riverside.
Yes.
Not beautiful downtown Burbank.
I'll go in my closet.
Beautiful downtown Riverside.
I have my safe room in my closet.
She's the Spectator. Always good to see you.
Always a pleasure, ma'am.
All right, that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Up next, Anticipating Irma. Stay with WJCT as we bring you updates on the hurricane through the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.